Rogers & Hollins is the oldest and largest family-owned jeweler in the country, and they stand behind everything they sell. They have an amazing selection of engagement rings, and they know everything about jewelry. And they're the only fine jeweler who offers lifetime repair and replacement against loss of diamonds or gemstones with no inspection required, ever.
Rogers and Hollins, jewelry created for now and forever.
Look out in the street there. You know what you don't see? My car. Because I had to sell it to pay the lawyer I hired when I got busted for drunk driving. Know what else you don't see? My girlfriend, who decided that a guy with no car and no license and no money was no fun.
Cops are out there cracking down on drunk driving all across the country, and they'll see you before you see them. Drive sober or get pulled over.
Brought to you by the Illinois Department of Transportation.
Welcome to another episode of Startup Radio. I'm proud to be a program on the STEM Dadia Network, along with our sister shows, Gaming Chords and STEM Voices. You can follow us at STEM Dadia Network. You can also follow us by just looking at On Startup Radio and startupradio.com. Today, I am very pleased to have Kobe Sconard. Did I say that right, Kobe?
Yep, you got it. Sconard, perfect.
All right. And Kobe, you are the founder and CEO of IdeaWake, and it's a fascinating enterprise that you have going, and I'm looking forward to talking about that. But before we get into that and the discussion and so forth, I want to thank you so much for agreeing to be a part of Startup Radio. Really appreciate you coming on board.
Most definitely, Charles. It's my pleasure, and thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So before you did IdeaWake, before you founded and started IdeaWake, first you're based in Wisconsin, is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep, heart of Milwaukee. Mm-hmm.
And how did, you have a background in accounting and finance, business administration. How was it that you came to arrive and before then you were CEO at crowds.io? Where did that kind of departure go from being employees, sales representatives, staff accountant, and so forth, working for others to doing your own thing and jumping into the startup venture?
Most definitely. Some would call it the abyss, right? So Charles, started at Ernst & Young originally, went to school for accounting and finance, and that was, my dad told me that was the backbone to everything, all business, right? And I was really good at accounting and did like it. But about my junior year in college, I came up with this idea. I was reading this book on crowdsourcing, and it was really, really impactful to me because of the fact that it was this movement that could empower so many people across the entire world. So I knew that the trend was we were riding a wave, if you will. And so when I took my job at Ernst & Young right out of college, I basically didn't want to miss out on that wave. So I went and founded the company and put in my 2 weeks basically on the first day of my training. So really short-term employment at Ernst & Young, but they were very supportive in the transition, and I can't thank them enough.
So, yeah, so you were in Ernst & Young for about 2 years. No, you weren't there for 2 years. You were at Ernst & Young for less than a year, right?
Yes, so less than a year at Ernst & Young, and I did the internship there originally, and then I was a staff accountant there for I ended up staying for about 2 months. And the reason, I guess, that I made the leap was it was just I was so passionate about crowdsourcing and, like I said before, how it could empower people. And I just, you know, was losing sleep at night. And even though it was good money being a public accountant, it really just, it paled in comparison to, you know, taking the leap and following your dream. So.
Well, some people would say that they'd lose more sleep being involved in a startup and taking the leap from at least what I imagine was a somewhat fixed salary to the uncertain waters of starting your own company. But nonetheless, you did that back in October 2013. And how did that work out? Because was crowds.io kind of overlapping with IdeaWake at the same time? Were they two separate but related entities? How do the two interact with one another?
Most definitely. So, yeah, I mean, it was obviously to start with, like, you know, the first part of that, it was obviously I was losing sleep, you know, both on both sides. Right. I couldn't believe what I just did once I had done it. But at the same time, I was, you know, I was very determined, and I thought of it this way. What's the most that you can lose? I was 23 years old. And the worst thing that could have possibly happened was I had to go get another job as an accountant if this didn't work out. You know, I had nobody relying on me. I had a cat. That was seriously like all, you know, I had to pay my rent and I had a cat versus right. having, you know, a wife, kids, and a mortgage. And well, obviously college debt, I still am paying off, but at the same time, it was just, you know, it's going to get harder and harder with each additional year that you don't, you know, follow your dreams. So, I figured at, you know, the young age of 23, there was no better time to actually just take a leap and you know, dive in. But the other side of it too, to just for a little bit of context. So as you know, in true startup, lean startup fashion, we started out as a online startup accelerator. So the original vision, and still, you know, my long-term vision, was to build a crowdsourcing community that could take ideas that people had on the way home from work, use a global network of people to predict which ideas would work. And then if they had a high enough probability of being successful in the back end, we had a global network of freelancers that you could connect with in order to build out your idea into a product. So that was Crowds, the original vision. And we did that for about 2 years. We had a hand in helping develop about 400 products over those 2 years. And the issue we ran into, Charles, was that we couldn't scale the business model. And, you know, raising money in Milwaukee for, you know, a transaction-based business model is really hard to do, especially when you're a software company. So we pivoted the business to IdeaWake and rebranded everything using the same core technology. But now instead of doing it externally with, you know, an open innovation type play, we're doing it with internally and leveraging the knowledge of a large company's employees to surface great ideas.
Well, let's talk about, I mean, what was the reaction to Crowds then? I mean, you talk about being involved in at least 400 projects. Tell me about that. I mean, how, when you started off, I mean, how did you start Crowds and start to get the exposure to where you're building a community with that many different projects going on, you know, that people are using it? How did you go from idea to building a presence in the community?
Honestly, just hustle in the beginning. We didn't have a very big marketing budget. And so it was just making constant calls with, you know, everything from manufacturers to different designers, reaching out to a lot of inventor communities and entrepreneurial communities on LinkedIn. And other social media platforms. And we were just doing it pretty organically in the beginning. It was just ground and pound, reaching out to different, you know, different inventors with ideas, and then also trying to connect them at the back end with different designers, developers, and manufacturers. So, like I said, it was very, very manual in the beginning. Then we started getting some press coverage, and then it kind of just snowballed for the, you know, for about a 9 month period, I'd say, where we really started to get some good traction. But then once again, it's that the proverbial paradox where you're, you know, starting to gain traction, but you're running out of money.
Right.
So you needed to figure out and really for our investors, it was how much more money we would need to raise to scale that business. And that was unattractive. So, yeah, but I mean, that's how we got the exposure. Not to, I'm kind of going on tangents right now on you, but
no, this is good. So, you know, was the community that you were building up, was that just Wisconsin based, or was that wider because you were on, you know, you were on the internet? Was it just a Wisconsin-based community, or did you get people involved from all over the U.S. and perhaps even internationally?
Mm-hmm. So yeah, we went straight international from the very beginning.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. What was the most? Do you have a particular favorite project that you remember from that?
You know, right when there were a couple different products that were related to. Like wireless charging, those portable chargers when they first came out on Kickstarter. And
right.
So what we really ended up acting as was like a pre-Kickstarter in the beginning. And then people would come back to us after Kickstarter to connect to do further development and manufacturing. So we ended up being this, you know, play that we were on both sides of crowdfunding platforms because there were so many of them out there that we ended up just being like a nice add-on, if you will, to either side of that process, getting that early stage validation. But then at the back end, actually being able to help fulfill products.
Right. Well, so let's, all right. So you were not the ability to scale up crowds with investors to where you really could take it to the stage that it would need to go wasn't in the cards. And so you pivoted, you moved to IdeaWake. What is IdeaWake? What are you doing with that platform?
Most definitely. So here's the elevator pitch, if you will, Charles. So employees at large companies, so when you say large, anything over about 150, 200 employees, they have great ideas because they're the ones interacting with the customer on a day-to-day basis, but they don't have a voice in, you know, basically strategy and operations within the business. So what we do is make it very easy for large companies to tap into the knowledge and ideas of their employees. And then we use the employees' knowledge of the business to, as we say, surface the 5% of ideas that will drive 95% of new business results, and then provide programs at the back end to actually help implement those ideas. So basically, we're building an incubator inside of large enterprise companies that have trouble innovating traditionally.
How is that going?
It's going really well.
Interested parties?
Yeah, so we're at the end of this month, we should be at 11 paying customers, and it's going really well. We pivoted about 14 months ago, rebuilt the product from line one. Same technology underlying, but we just built it a lot better this time around. And yeah, I mean, we can't disclose some of the companies that we're working with,
sure.
But a very, very large, that this will be going public in the next week or so, but a very large company, a very large healthcare organization in Wisconsin. We have been piloting and have an annual contract with them now. And in addition to that, we're working with a subsidiary of Quest Diagnostics, so a couple law firms. What we're finding is that the product industry agnostic. It's really based upon company size. So there's a lot of potential there. It's just now more getting the word out and starting to really build that marketing funnel.
Right. So if I have an entity, which I don't, but if I have an entity, a business that has 150 or more employees, this is an opportunity to essentially pull back the barrier of hierarchical bureaucracy in those organizations and allowing individual employees that may have great ideas on their own or may have great ideas because they're working there and they think of ways to improve. They would go to IdeaWake, or let's say your customer would be using IdeaWake and then allowing or telling employees about it, and the employees would be able to share their ideas through IdeaWake. How do they get to the people that need to see them? How does that filter up? Are there particular individuals within the organization that that read all of the ideas, that get all the ideas and decide where to take them from there?
Mm-hmm. So to not to get too thick into the weeds on you, but we have a functionality that we call workflows. And what those workflows do is allow you to set specific groups of individuals to review ideas that have a specific amount of traction throughout the process. So initially when ideas are submitted, and to back up a little bit too, we submit ideas around these things that we call challenges. So challenges are simply a topic that you would post ideas under. They can be related to growth, cost reduction and efficiency, or improving employee engagement. And from there, employees would come in, submit ideas on one of those topics. Then we have crowd voting is what we call it initially. And the top ideas will bubble up from there, from the crowd voting on those ideas. Then they would move over into a second stage or a third stage where you would have a leadership team or a steering committee doing a further review of those ideas. So we focus on, we know that, you know, from a leadership standpoint or executive management standpoint, the one thing that those individuals don't have more of is time. So we try to separate the wheat from the chaff, if you will, initially, so that they don't have to review all ideas. That being said, though, one thing that is very important is feedback loop in this process. So we normally have a moderator who would be a mid-level manager that's managing this whole process and making sure that everybody is receiving some type of feedback or comment from you know, a higher up within the organization on their idea. That make sense?
It does. And do you use, it sounds like you're almost using some like gamification principles, right? Rewarding, are employees rewarded as they go along?
Yes. So when you, everything that you do on the site, basically you're earning points. Those points range depending on the value that, you know, your action's providing. So you earn 5 points for submitting an idea, 1 point for submitting a comment. You receive points for receiving upvotes. And from there, we all, those points aggregate onto a leaderboard. And then you can also offer prizes for participation, and you can set those prizes to be whatever you want. They could be a week off of work. They could be, you know, a new Amazon Echo. The sky is kind of the limit. We built the gamification system to be very broad so it could apply to a bunch of different use cases.
Well, it sounds intriguing, and it almost sounds intriguing to for a small business to use that. I mean, certainly the dynamics when you have just a few employees, I imagine that you'd ideally at least like to be communicating with, you know, the number of employees. If you're at 9 employees, hopefully you're all communicating, whereas that difficulty is, it's much more difficult on a large scale where there are a number of employees. So how did you reach that number of 150 to kind of as a demarcation point below which really maybe not and above which game on?
Mm-hmm. So I mean it really comes down to our minimum community size that we would suggest is 50 signed up users, and that's really because you need there's triggers that start to occur basically, because as you receive more activity on the platform, it will start sending notifications via email to different users within the system. And so you need a minimum number of people to be participating in the system for it to catch on. And if you can't get the engine started and turn for the first, second, and third time, it's really hard to, you know, scale up and increase long-term engagement with the platform.
Right. And so, just the law of more numbers, more people being involved, the more likely that you are to get that engagement.
Precisely. And the reason for the 150 number is normally that even, you know, if you have a 150-person organization, you're not going to involve all employees up front. And so, you know, when we start off with our first challenge, you want that challenge to go really well. And so we normally, you know, require it or strongly suggest that you have at least 50 members in the community to start.
All right. Well, let's shift. I mean, it's a fantastic idea, although I know you know that. But nonetheless, just objectively, I think it's a great idea because so many times in my experience, people working at a company do have great ideas, but there's really not a mechanism to get those to the people that may look at them or may make the decisions. And this seems like a great opportunity, a great platform to do that. But so you start this, you get it going, coming off of crowds or kind of transitioning for the community, the listeners that we have here at Startup Radio, what are some of the, like, what would be one or two of the biggest hurdles that you've faced as a startup affecting your operations or just that you've had to deal with over the last couple of years?
Yeah, so I mean, if you want to be a, you know, angel-backed or venture-backed, people have different names for it, startup, I would say raising that first $25,000 is really difficult, especially when you are really green behind the ears, if you will, and you don't have a lot of experience. So that was, for me personally, one of the biggest hurdles that I had to overcome because it was a one-man mission in the beginning, right? But one of the other hurdles I would say is after that, really understanding at a early stage whether or not you should pivot. So we could have saved a year and a half of time probably if we would have just been upfront with ourselves and followed what the data said from the very beginning with crowds. So, you know, everybody has their baby and nobody wants to think that their baby's ugly when they have this idea, right? But really following those lean principles and measuring the results and really holding yourself accountable so that you pivot earlier and more often, so you can come and really get that problem solution fit and ultimately product market fit over the long haul.
So do you think being a startup necessarily involves learning and being quite aware of, you know, how the dynamics, so that you almost to a certain extent, it sounds like if you are really paying attention, you almost kind of lose control over what your startup, what your business, your idea may be, because the marketplace demographics may very well dictate where your cost effectiveness will end up being. And it sounds like that's what you're saying, is that there were numbers suggesting what it should be maybe a year and a half, you know, 12 to 18 months beforehand, but it really is realizing that. And then once after you realize that, making the decision to go, as you said, where the numbers show you. Was it a difficult decision?
It was incredibly difficult, but, you know, in the famous words of Mike Tyson, everybody has a plan until they get punched in the face, right? So it's really, you have, as an entrepreneur, naturally, especially when you're young, you have this preconceived notion of what your idea is, and all of, you know, the studies and data, and I'm sure you're familiar with lean startup methodology, right? So I mean, following that to a T and not biasing, you know, your idea is going to change naturally. It's a natural part of the process. And if you're not willing to waver on what your idea is, then you're going to have a high percentage chance of failure. Maybe your idea doesn't change, you know, an incredible amount. For us, it went, well, not completely 360. What went 360 was, you know, or 180 rather, was the market we were targeting. So we went from dealing completely with the public to selling the same technology to enterprise. And now we have traction and we're able to get, you know, six-figure deals now because of the fact that we applied the technology in the right market. So it's really just understanding and being objective about the goals that you want to hit. And if you're not hitting those goals over, you know, a 6-month period, really sitting down with your team and figuring out next steps. So otherwise you just
where do you see yourself in 6 months to a year from now?
So basically our goal over the next 6 months is to double the size of the company. So right now we're on a growth trajectory. We have our marketing going really strong. Basically to get about 50 to 60 ideas that have been submitted across all of our platforms implemented. So we're trying to measure the dollar impact of, you know, the financial impact of the ideas that are going through the life cycle of our process, right? Really have some solid numbers and case studies behind the financial impacts for, you know, the initial 20 companies that we're working with.
And are they allowing you to get that kind of analytics?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And so we're anonymizing all of that data. But yes, it's in all of our contracts. So we anonymize the data, and we're actually partnering with a college that I can't disclose yet either with their data science department to go through and help remove bias in the decision-making process and then also help improve our process and refine it further to help the companies we work with get more insight and better results.
Right. Interesting. What is, you know, what if you had advice for somebody right now who wanted to go with their dream, move out of accounting, move out of accounting, or move out of whatever they happen to be doing, what would be the advice that you would convey to somebody that's wanting to engage or, you know, go off and pursue their dream of a startup?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Simply put, it's never going to get any easier. There's always going to be a reason for you not to do something. And those reasons are only, that list is only going to get longer over time, right? So to my point in the very, you know, beginning of our conversation, Charles, was that I didn't have a mortgage, I didn't have a wife, and I didn't have kids, right? So the longer that you wait to start and, you know, follow your passion, the harder it's going to be. And the worst thing that you can live with in life is regret, right? So it's always going to be that what if you don't take the leap. So my one piece of advice would be to, you know, just jump. And it sounds, you know, it is very easy to do, but it's you know, the hardest thing to do at the same time.
Sure.
But once you do, yeah. Mm-hmm.
No, I mean, I completely agree with you, and you're right. I mean, the longer that you go on, the more life intervenes and other things. Not to say that you couldn't do it at that point as well down the line, but it's certainly, as you move along, things perhaps may get more difficult. At the same time, I would throw out that sometimes circumstances will throw an opportunity at your door that might not have been there 6 months before. But nonetheless, I think you have a good point that if the itch is there, there oftentimes may be no better time. What are some of the, you know, when you decided to, or you had this idea, you were contemplating whether to pursue it or not, or even after maybe you decided to and you engaged to, you know, crowds and then IdeaWake, what were some of the resources that you went to for knowledge and experience in helping you as a young startup? Were there any books? Were there any online resources? Were there any gurus, so to speak, that you looked up to and benefited from?
Mm-hmm. So I would say the hard thing about hard things for a book is something that every entrepreneur should read. When you're having a hard day and you read that book, you feel a lot better.
really?
So that's a definite read. Then in addition to that, resources, I mean, In the early days, the thing I was really trying to do was raise enough money to hire a team. So everybody thinks that raising money is this really difficult thing to do, and it's not easy, but it's just persistence. It's just like, you know, everything else. If you're a salesperson now, it's looking at your second degree network. You can just go onto LinkedIn and starting to tap into different resources that are already at your disposal.
Let's talk about that. How did you use LinkedIn in that regard? How did you be persistent in pursuing funding and so forth?
I went through my network on LinkedIn. Anybody that I had remembered that could potentially be high value, I, you know, wrote down their name and reached out to them first on LinkedIn. Then I found their email, sent them an email, and then I gave them a call. Lead investor now, before he invested his first $25,000, I had to reach out and meet with him 7 times before he actually invested. Yeah. So, I mean, it's really about persistence. Once again, a lot of the stuff is, you know, from getting customers to raising money to starting, it's really easy. It just requires a ton of persistence. The actions are not that difficult. It's just whether or not you're willing to have the wherewithal to do them repetitively in order to get the results that you want.
Well, I think that's a very good point and a very good example for anybody listening that you know, there was a success at the end of that those 7 meetings, right? It actually came to fruition, and so the value, the ROI on those meetings, you can't even perhaps calculate. And so people should not get frustrated that somebody that's showing interest wants a third, fourth, fifth, or even a 7th meeting. Did anybody react negatively to being contacted from you?
No, mostly they would just not respond to me. I really haven't had that many experiences where it's like, leave me alone. One of our investors, actually, I haven't spoken with him in probably a year now, which is kind of funny. But I had, I had reached out to him about 5 or 6 times without actually getting a response once. And then he met with me and he's like, basically he invested $25,000 just so I would leave him alone. So, I mean, once again, and that's, by the way, a very, very edge case that doesn't happen often. And you don't necessarily want that either, because you want your investors being active, but, it never hurts to be persistent. And even if you do get, some people that give you negative feedback, the number of positive outcomes that are going to result are definitely going to outweigh the negatives that would happen off of somebody yelling at you, for example.
As you were refining your efforts in that regard, and reaching out to people, where, did you refine your skills? Was there something that you found to be more effective than not?
The time of day when you email and people would be one thing. So I would never email important contacts on Tuesdays, and that's just for customers specifically. It's just you learn it. I'm going to have trouble with this one because there's so many things that you learn along the way that I could talk about that for, 10 hours straight. Right. if we break it down to, important things that you learn along the way, it's be persistent, but be smart at the same time. So, one of the things, I guess, was going back to knowing when to pivot and following your data. Record your data from day one, record and set goals from day one. And if you don't do that, then you're going to wake up, a year down the road when you should have pivoted at month 3 once again.
So LinkedIn, and what have you found the best way to build, your customer base? Word of mouth? Was it online marketing? How did you get to where you have these 20 or so paying enterprise customers at this point?
Mm-hmm. So, and just to clarify that, the 20 is we want to double over the next 6 months, right? So
sure.
Right now we're just at the end of this month going to be breaking 10. But how we did that was, in the beginning, the first 5 were going to LinkedIn and looking at my extended network. And the second 5 now that are coming in are based on LinkedIn advertising. So we've tried Google AdWords. We've tried, Twitter advertisement. We've tried Facebook advertisement. And for B2B marketing, I would say that LinkedIn is by far, from the data that we have, the number one resource or the number one, marketing tool to use. That's not to say that you can't use, Facebook, the other social media platforms, but for advertising and spending ad dollars specifically, it really just allows you to hyper-target who your persona is and who you're going after.
Napa know-how.
The Napa guy knows not to judge a man by his car's multicolor paint job or absence of modern gadgetry. Who cares if it's technically old enough to vote and the windows are powered by the strength of your left arm? Your monthly payment is zero, and it'll stay that way. Because with over 500,000 parts and a little Napa know-how, you can keep anything on the road. She may not be pretty, but she's all yours. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
What other endeavors do you have going on, or is this taking all of your time? One of the episodes that we had previously focused on balance of work and life outside work. How's that going? Is being, almost going into their fourth year here with the combination of, from when Crowd started and then, IdeaWake about the same time, but 4 years in, close to 4 years in, how is that balance to work to life, so to speak, work and play?
So I'm probably not the right person to ask that one. But I would say part of the reason that, I'm working, between 80 to 100 hours a week on any given week still. I basically live at the office right now still. But the reason for that is because of the fact that we pivoted the whole company and did a complete 180 on, you know, who we were targeting. We had to rebuild the business and the whole entire product from line one. I would say in another year from now, I'll be able to actually go down that path of having some more free time. I love snowboarding, you know, doing water sports during the summer. So I get out and, you know, you got to have some downtime on the weekends. But mostly Monday through Sunday, I'm you know, on the grindstone trying to grow. So, but it is, I mean, it is important, and it's not for everybody. You need to find that happy balance for yourself. It's really different for each individual, I'd say.
Sure.
But really knowing yourself is key.
I couldn't agree more. And I think that, you know, at different points of one's life, at different stages, that balance is going to shift and be different for sure. Talking about, you know, employees and building it up, how big is Idea Wake right now?
Mm-hmm. So yeah, we have 5 employees, and there's 4 full-time and 1 part-time. And then we have about 3 contractors that we work with on a regular basis right now. So my goal personally is to be at 10 employees by the end of the year.
And you're Milwaukee based, is that correct?
Correct. Mm-hmm.
What is the startup scene in that area of Wisconsin? What is the Wisconsin startup scene like?
So it's growing, and it's still, in my opinion, it's still segmented. There are a lot, you know, we just built, it's not just now, it was about 2 years ago, they built Ward 4, which was the first large-scale startup co-working space in the city. And so there's a lot of people in the startup community kind of coalesces around that one location. But I mean, it is a growing community. There are investors here. And I would say that, you know, I have more than a handful of individuals that I can always go to whenever I'm having, you know, an issue to, you know, I'm trying to get through or a connection that I need to make. It's very, very easy. It's a very, very tight-knit community. Because we're not as big as Chicago, right? But at the same time, that's not necessarily a bad thing, in my opinion.
Well, I completely agree with that. I mean, and even being in Chicago, you know, there when I first started out, I know that there were customers that appreciated the fact that we were not right downtown in the loop, that we were outside that core, and I assume that, you know, in other situations as well, there's such as yours. I mean, there's an advantage. There are advantages to being where you are if you look for them and turn them to your advantage. I mean, certainly some would argue that maybe it's great to be in Silicon Valley or out west, but then you've got cost structures that are much more significant there than here. And I imagine that, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the targeting LinkedIn for advertising your potential customer base or the developing customer base is not just geographically dependent on your location. It's much broader than that, just as it was in crowds. Am I correct in that?
Very correct. So, we're a lot of companies that are coming into the pipeline now are actually based out of the UK, so out of the country even. So beauty of web-based businesses, right?
Yeah, I mean, and the potential is infinite in that regard. How is it dealing with talking about overseas customers and so forth? How is that going? And, you know, because I know that they have different nuances in terms of employee data protection, privacy, and so forth. How are you navigating that?
So we have a good lawyer. That's one thing for the terms and conditions side. So we're working through that right now, and it's going to be a continual process for everything from the taxes to the user terms and conditions, as you had mentioned as well, and privacy policies. But in addition to that, the most glaring thing is the time zone difference. So we've gotten close to getting 2 companies in Australia. Both the deals have not gone through, but the time zone difference there, it's like a 12-hour time zone difference. So being able to set up meetings, because our process up front is quite manual. So we onboard you to the software, we train your initial champions to bring you on. And so figuring out that, and that's the biggest nuance, I'd say, is being able to, well, you have to be willing to stay up late and get up early sometimes.
Indeed. Well, I mean, but if you want the business, meeting those nuances, meeting those situations is a necessity. And, I mean, there's certainly a give and take in that regard. One question that popped into my mind as you talk about bringing your customers on board, is their portal branded for them, or is it your, you know, is it IdeaWake through and through, or do you do branding for the particular companies? Do you know what I mean by that?
I know exactly what you mean. So every company gets their own private database and instance. So when you're working with enterprise, security is paramount. And so every company has their own database. They get their own URL that's separate and secure. And you have custom logo. You can do custom messaging throughout the entire platform. And something we're working on now too, it's not critical, but it's nice to have, is a color scheme. So in the next month or so here, you'll be able to update your color scheme to match your company branding. So it'll look just like your website.
Fantastic. Yeah, I wish that you had a model for smaller enterprises, but I certainly understand the perspective that you really do need that engagement for to build that kind of community for each of the enterprise customers. Go ahead.
I kind of oversimplified things in the beginning. So one of the ways that we can work with smaller companies is that the platform can be used not to just do closed innovation inside of a company's walls, but it can also be used for open innovation. So right now, by default, the platform, like all of our platforms, come in private only mode. So you can only be, access any of the data or sign up if you have an invite to the platform. But we have a setting where you can open up the platform and engage your customers as well as vendors. So if you're a smaller company and you're a B2C company and have a lot of customers, you could use the platform just as effectively. But
right,
that starts to confuse people when you start to talk about, all the different parties that you can engage.
No, I can understand that, but I'm spot on, and lights went off when you said that, so that, it is the opportunity for if an entity is brave enough, right, to invite their customers to participate in the community, give ideas, and no doubt they'd probably get feedback in that regard. But that really has some interesting possibilities. Has anybody explored that route yet, or is that more just a possibility that's not yet been implemented by somebody?
So that's phase two for a lot of our customers right now. So right now, all of our platforms are focused internally. But what we can do is you could have an open innovation community, but at the same time, you could be semi-open, is what we call it. So everything in our system is based upon groups. So there, you could have an employee group. You could have a sales department as a group. You could also have customer list A as a group. And for each challenge that we post, we can target a specific group for that challenge. So we can be engaging our employees for one challenge, customers for one challenge, and vendors for one challenge. And only those parties can see what they're supposed to see. So the challenge topic itself, but then also all of the ideas and content and activity that are happening within that challenge. So we're doing employee-based right now, but there's three of our customers right now in basically by the end of Q3 that will transition the platform and start engaging customers as well.
Fantastic. It's really, really interesting. And that certainly piques my interest. So it is possible, although right now the target is for enterprise companies with employees of 150 or more, because you really need a good solid base of around 50 engaged people signing up. And as you mentioned before, you'll not always if you have 150 employees, more than likely not all 150 employees are going to necessarily sign up. So you want that breadth so that you can get the sample, that 50 that you need, and maybe it's more and fantastic. So that's for a closed network. Employees are able to share ideas of different categories, different classes that they believe, where I imagine that the employer can set, where they're looking for input, they're looking for ideas for employees. And I guess let's stop there for a second and ask that question. Those parameters, those classes of or categories of input, cost savings or employee morale or what have you, are those customizable by your customers or are those preset by IdeaWake?
Yep, so it's completely open and customizable. So think of it as, at its simplest level, a thread, right? So you can post a new topic or a challenge on how do we grow by 5% in product line A? And you can send that to your sales team, your field sales team, and get their feedback on that topic. Similarly, for our operations group, we could say, how can we reduce cost by, or, how can we reduce scrap by 10% on this specific line? By the end of 2017, and just involve a specific group of operators within the company. So it's a completely open system, completely customizable.
And then down the line, if there are not only those customers that we just talked about, but other smaller customers that are looking to get, that may have the sample size from their customer base or vendors or some other group, they could use the same platform with an open-ended perspective and inviting people to join that way. Is that correct?
Yes, down the road you can do it in a more open-ended perspective.
All right. Were there any things that we haven't talked about or covered that you would like to say, share with our listeners on Startup Radio?
I didn't mention one of the other things. You're saying what other initiatives or what other things are you involved in? Two of those things, well, really one that I wanted to focus on was we're trying to figure out new and fun ways to use the technology and also to, give back to the community for, social initiatives. So we actually just launched a challenge that's open to the public on how do we reduce opiate overdose deaths. And first it was focused in Milwaukee, but we've expanded it across the whole nation because it is a nationwide epidemic. We've got about 150 people signed up on it right now, but are really trying to get the word out over the next couple of weeks in order to get engaged more parties in it.
Well, where do people go to sign up for that?
Mm-hmm. So, if you go right to our website, ideawake.com, you'll see a link right on the top of the screen. The actual platform is hosted at app.ideawake.com. That's the easiest way to get there, though, is just go IdeaWake or search IdeaWake heroin, and then you'll get redirected right to it.
And there's no fee to sign up. It's free to participate in that endeavor, correct?
Oh, yes. So we're actually giving out prizes for participation. So
we're
giving out
what
a couple
kind of prizes?
Yeah. So Amazon Echo, I think we're giving out three of those. We have brewer's tickets that were donated by the Salvation Army. And what else do we have? I think those are the two primary. Oh, we're giving out gift cards as well that were donated by some local bars. So $50 gift cards. So we have about 10 of them right now.
Fantastic. Well, I think that's a great idea. And it's phenomenal that you're turning back to the community and using the platform that you have for that social good. So that's one thing that you were mentioning. Was there something else that you were wanting to talk about, or was that basically it?
Well, now it's off topic a little bit, but one thing I would say is that you always want to give back to the community. So I'm a member of Echelon is the name of the group. It's actually a branch of the Salvation Army. So when I'm not working, or with my team, that's trying to do my best to give back and trying. You do need at least one or two things to get your mind off of work. Most definitely. So not to say that startups don't require an exorbitant amount of work, because that's what it takes to take something from nothing and scale it and make it happen. But at the same time, you can have fun along the way and have to find those one or two things that you can do outside of work
I would say.
Couldn't agree more. Before I let you go, because we are running up on our time here, I wanted to turn back to the effort that you're doing with opiate abuse, and that really is exciting, opens a lot of doors or ideas for me. And I'm wondering, for those people involved in not-for-profit organizations that may have causes or efforts where that crowdsourcing of ideas could be a phenomenal way to improve any number of things, do you all have scaled pricing or so forth for nonprofit organizations that may want to kind of replicate what you're doing with the opiate abuse, getting ideas from the community on how to improve certain things or address certain issues, climate change, whatever the case may be? Is that something that IdeaWake is open to? Should they reach out to you, or is that a bit premature in that regard?
We are definitely open to it. So, I mean, if it's for the social good, you know, it could be local, regional, global. We're definitely open to doing reduced pricing for those types of initiatives.
Right.
So.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Well, I really enjoyed this conversation, and it's been enlightening for me. I've really enjoyed talking about different ways that you marketed, went out and reached out to people. You took that initiative, and I really like to see that not only with the growth factor that IdeaWake has now following the pivot, you're using that same platform for social good, and I recommend that everybody that has a moment, that has an idea regarding the opiate abuse epidemic that is facing our country across any kind of demographic limitations. And in fact, I'd argue that there are no demographic limitations in where that abuse is finding. Where do they go again? Can you repeat that for our listeners?
Mm-hmm. So the actual URL is app.ideawake.com. But a lot of people have trouble with that. So if you just go to our website, ideawake.com, you can't miss the link. It's basically made it most of our homepage right now, the top section of it. So you just click on that link, and then it will take you right to the challenge. And Charles, also, thank you very much for taking the time as well. I just wanted to say that. It's been great talking to you.
Oh, absolutely. No problems there. We're fortunate to have you on as a guest. One final question for you, and that is, if there are any companies out there, or if there are any organizations out there that are interested in learning more about IdeaWake, certainly they can go to the website you've given, but is there any particular individual that they should reach out to?
Yeah, so, I mean, any company that's interested, you can reach out to myself or my co-founder. So my email is Kobe, C-O-B-Y, at IdeaWake.com. And then my co-founder's email, his name's Trey Tessman. His email is Trey, T-R-A-E, at IdeaWake.com.
Fantastic. Kobe, thanks so much. We are glad to have you. Hopefully we'll have you back maybe in 6 months toward the end of the year or in the new year and see how you're doing. I wish you all the best.
It'll be my pleasure, Charles. Look forward to it. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Stay tuned for our next episodes on Startup Radio, part of the STEM Daddian Network. And also be sure to listen, if you're interested, to Gaming Chords and STEM Voices, our sister shows. I thank Kobe and IdeaWake for spending time with us, and I wish all of you out there the best growth and happiness as we move into the summer. Thank you. Bye now.
I modified my wristwatch so that it always reads game time. Every memo I write at the office is written on poster board, and you can read it from 100 yards away. My heckling once made an umpire reverse a call. Granted, he may have come to the conclusion on his own, but I'd like to believe it was me. Why? Because I live to see my team live.
Sports fans, there's no better place to get tickets for sports, concerts, theater, and more than at VividSeats.com and the Vivid Seats app.
Last night I was up late. I got the chills. I had goosebumps. I was sweating. I felt like I was having an out-of-body experience. And that's all before the headliner took the stage.
Best show ever.
Nothing beats seeing your favorite band live. And there's no better place to get tickets for concerts, sports.
Hi, this is Maury Moreland Morrison here to tell you GEICO has more than just great savings. Much more. Yes, while GEICO could help you rack up more moolah faster than you can say metamorphosis, they've also been the fastest growing auto insurer for more than 10 years. That's more like it. Furthermore, GEICO has fast and friendly claim service. That might seem like an oxymoron, but it's not. All the more reason to say no other auto insurer has more than GEICO. GEICO, expect great savings and a whole lot more.